Hello, I'm Laura McAllister. I'm a professor at Cardiff University and currently a vice president of UEFA as well. I'm also a fellow at the Institute of Welsh Affairs, and in my opinion, it's never been more important to talk openly about Wales's future and how we can address the opportunities and challenges ahead. To do this, we need places like the IWA, but they also need our support to continue their work, especially to encourage discussions for Wales's future to help come up with the solutions that we really need. So if you can do it and believe in the work of the IWA, I'd really urge you to become a member or make a donation. Diolch yn fawr iawn.
Hello and welcome to the first episode of our new podcast from the Welsh Agenda, the IWA's in-house magazine. For those of you who don't yet know us, the IWA is Wales's leading independent think tank, with a long track record of shaping debates and influencing change in Wales through policy, research and advocacy, our online and print publications which provide platforms for robust comment and debate, and our agenda-setting events. We are a membership organisation with nearly 1,000 members across the country and far further afield. We are funded by our members, the events we run ourselves, and trusts and foundations. The Welsh Agenda is our in-house current magazine, supported by the Books Council of Wales. We have published articles from some of Wales's most prominent politicians, academics and thinkers. My name is Mateus Bridge. I am an editor in residence at the Welsh Agenda magazine. In this episode, I'll be taking you through a discussion about the Welsh language. With over 400,000 speakers currently using Welsh in their day-to-day lives, what forces and institutions have shaped the way that we speak Welsh today? There has been much talk and debate over the state of our native language's future and its use in the public sphere. Recently, the National Eisteddfod came under fire after Welsh artist Sage Todds decided not to play the festival as a result of the Eisteddfod's language policy. Richard Wynne-Jones, Professor of Politics, spoke passionately on S4C's current affairs programme, Y Byd yn Ei Le, about his difficulty to see the Welsh Government achieve its 2050 target because of the language's decline on a social level. I am a Welsh speaker. Like many people my age, I learnt Welsh in school and am now the first and to date only fluent Welsh speaker in my family. In my life, I navigate different professional and personal identities, and it sometimes feels like it can be hard to reconcile both. In this podcast, I spoke to researchers, government officials and artists. Through their work, they show that the Welsh language is a vibrant, living entity not confined to the classroom. If you live in Wales or perhaps were born or moved here, you would have encountered Welsh at some point whether you speak it or not. Either way, I hope this podcast encourages you to think and learn more about our language. One of the biggest boosts to the Welsh language is education. The 2023 census shows a significant amount of children aged 3 and above are able to speak Welsh. I feel privileged to have had an education in Welsh, from primary school all the way up to university. I take great pride in speaking Welsh among friends, and I can say with certainty that without it, I wouldn't be in the position I am in today. That isn't to say that everything has been smooth sailing. When I left Ysgol Gyfan Gwynllyw in 2017, my relationship with the Welsh language was much different compared to how it is today. To understand why that might be, I first spoke to one of the people who have influenced my vision of the Welsh language and its role in education and access to opportunities. I'm joined by Dr. Sean Jones, Senior Lecturer of Sociology at Cardiff University. He is partly responsible for developing Welsh medium educational provisions in the School of Social Sciences. Dr. Jones was my lecturer and one of my personal tutors during my undergraduate studies at Cardiff University. I was one of the first students that attended the first Welsh language module under the School of Social Sciences. In my interview with Dr. Sean Jones, we first discussed the Welsh language education system in Wales, and later on, Dr. Jones explains the findings from his study of work which explored whether or not Welsh language education affects children's aspirations. Dr. Jones studied the aspirations of children from the South Wales Valleys, an area that is consistently one of the lowest Welsh-speaking areas in Wales, who attended a Welsh language medium school with children who attended English language medium schools. During his study, he interviewed students from the South Wales Valleys and asked them about their future ambitions. In this interview, he told me what he'd found.
Oedd yn ddiddorol, ni siarad efo'r athrawon yn y ddwy ysgol. Gan yr ysgol Saesneg, oedd yr prifathro'n deitha fi.
During my study, I had the opportunity to interview teachers from both Welsh and English medium schools, and what I found was that in English schools, the teachers explained to me that they found it difficult to engage with some of the parents, perhaps because of their own negative experiences of education. So, for example, if a teacher needed to call a parent in school to discuss something about their child, they found it hard to engage with the parents, whereas in Welsh language schools, where a lot of the children came from more traditional working class backgrounds, their parents were much more engaging and supportive. I argue, in Welsh language schools, you are more likely to have parents that are active and interested in their children's educational future compared to parents that send their children to English schools in the South Wales Valleys. So when it comes to the aspirations of young people, I found that children who attend Welsh language schools set their sights on university and a higher education, which is something that you traditionally link to the middle classes. So I found that working class children who attend Welsh schools are more likely to want to go to university. In addition, parents, I would argue, who send their children to Welsh schools are more aspirational because they make the active choice of sending their child to that particular school. This shows an extra level of interest in their decision. Of course, I have to be careful what I say here, because there are many English language schools in Wales that are very good. But when I interviewed students that attend Welsh schools, I discovered that they had the added pressure of deciding whether or not to continue their higher education or career path using Welsh. And this is the problem. The majority of students I interviewed said that they weren't sure what to do. So this is interesting, because if you think about the South Wales Valleys, it's a place where traditionally there aren't a lot of Welsh speakers. So the only place where these kids spoke Welsh was in the classroom. But there are also many other factors. For example, perhaps they want to move away and think that their Welsh won't be useful to them anymore. Or perhaps they want to stay and start a career in Wales, but think that only English will be good for their work and not their Welsh. Again, these are just some of the many factors that may affect a student's aspirations of continuing to use their Welsh.
Mae'r cymod yn ardal, lle does gen ti ddim llawer o siaradwyr Cymraeg. Felly, ei o bobl ifanc yma, oedden nhw'n mond yn siarad Cymraeg yn yr ysgol, so oedden nhw'n gweld y Gymraeg fel iaith yr ysgol, a wedyn Saesneg ydy iaith tu allan. Ond hefyd, mae'n nifer o resymau eraill, oedd falle oedden nhw eisiau symud i ffwrdd, a felly oedden nhw'n meddwl, wel, di'r Gymraeg ddim yn mynd i fod yn ddefnyddiol i fi. Ond hefyd, rhaid eisiau dal aros yng Nghymru yn dadla, wel, dwi'n meddwl yn dyfodol, os dwi'n pan ddweud mewn swydd, So, fyddai ddim anon yn Gymraeg, fyddai anon yn Saesneg. So, mae'n nifer y ffactorau gwahanol sydd yn cael effaith ar os ydy bobl ifanc eisiau parhau i ddefnyddio'r Gymraeg.
A few years ago, I listened to an interview with Welsh folk singer and nationalist Dafydd Iwan. Dafydd mentioned in that interview with S4C that the difference in Welsh education today compared to years ago is that today, children speak Welsh in the classroom and English on the play yard. Whereas, years ago, children spoke English in the school and Welsh on the playground. I asked Dr Sean Jones his opinion on this analysis. When Welsh language schools first opened in South West Wales, the kids came from Welsh-speaking families, but that's changed today, and I think it's a good thing. It's good that parents who don't speak Welsh made the decision and gave their children the opportunity to learn and speak a second language. But as I expressed earlier, you have that added challenge of ensuring that young people will continue to use their Welsh and see the language as a working, vibrant language that isn't confined to the classroom. And I'd argue that this isn't a challenge that's unique to children who weren't raised in a Welsh-speaking household. It extends to children who were raised by Welsh-speaking parents. So, for a personal example, I was born and raised in Blaenau Ffestiniog, and both of my parents speak Welsh. But interestingly, I spoke English with some of my friends, although we lived in a traditional Welsh-speaking town. I suppose at the time it just wasn't seen as cool to speak Welsh. But it wasn't until I moved to Cardiff and realised that there aren't a lot of Welsh speakers around where my perception changed and it became more personal to me to, I suppose, safeguard the language. I began to appreciate it, realise its vulnerability and how vital it is to Welsh culture.
Ac oedd y mond pan mae eisiau symud lawr i Gaerdydd, a sylwi, waw, does oedd yn cyn gymaint siarad Cymraeg, a nes i just gweld bod hynna'n, a nath hynna'n wneud o'n beth mwy pwysig i fi mewn ffordd, bod oedd o, tyd, mae'r Gymraeg yn iaith, mae'n fregus, ond mae hefyd yn rhywbeth gwahanol, mae o'n, tyd, a mae o, Dwi'n dod i werthfawrogi'r iaith Gymraeg ac yn gweld o'n rhan bwysig o ddiwylliant Cymru.
How has Cardiff's Welsh language scene evolved since you moved here?
Ydw, swn i'n dweud, nes i symud lawr i Gaerdydd 14 mlynedd yn ôl, ac jyst yn anecdotaidd, dwi'n gweld gwahaniaeth.
So I moved to Cardiff around 14 years ago, and I definitely hear more people speak Welsh in Cardiff today compared to when I first moved here. If you look at the recent census, so that's 2021, you'll see that there has been a decline in the number of speakers. However, one area that I picked up on was Park Victoria, because it had over 30% of Welsh speakers in that area. So that's significant, because that's the number of Welsh speakers you would usually associate with the traditional Welsh heartlands, so places like Gwynedd. I'd also argue that there are more great things happening in Cardiff, like Mentra Iaith Caerdydd, doing fantastic things to promote the Welsh language, and free to attend festivals like Tafel, celebrating Welsh artists. The only problem I have with this is that for young people who live in the traditional heartlands, they have to move down to places like Cardiff, where all the best Welsh-speaking jobs are available. I don't think enough is being done to help people who want to stay and work in their hometowns. I think Welsh government needs to do more for people who live in places like Blaenau Ffestiniog, who don't want to make the move to major cities in South Wales for work.
To pethau fel Tafwyl, to digwyddiad am ddim sy'n yr iaith Gymraeg. Dwi'n meddwl hwn di un o'r broblemau sy'n gynnu o'r iaith Gymraeg. Mae llawer o swyddi gorau yng Nghymru yn Gaerdydd, a llawer o swyddi hefyd lle ti angen siarad o'r Cymraeg, felly os ti'n meddwl am Llywodraeth Cymru, BBC Cymru, a sefydliadau eraill fel yna. Mae'n gyd yn teulu bod yn fanna. Be swn i'n dadla ydy, esiampl da o hyn, so nes i symud o Flaenau Ffestiniog i Gaerdydd, dwi dal yn Gaerdydd, a mae rhywle fel Blaenau Ffestiniog, da ni wedi, mae yna lawer o bobl ifanc yn symud o ardaloedd fel Blaenau Ffestiniog i symud i ddinasoedd fel Caerdydd. A mae anna ni Llywodra Cymru gwneud fwy er mwyn sicrhau bod nhw'n gallu cadw bobl ifanc sy'n eisiau aros i'r ardal, chos mae anna ni bobl ifanc yn eisiau symud o Blaenau Ffestiniog yn eisiau mynd i dinas, ond mae anna ni Llywodra Cymru wneud fwy er mwyn sicrhau bod pobl yn aros yn ei ardaloedd.
When discussing the case with friends and colleagues, I often came back to a problem that I and other Welsh language speakers are faced with, being corrected by other Welsh speakers. As a Welsh language speaker who learned to speak Welsh outside of my family, I find that discussions around what constitutes proper Welsh have sometimes made me think twice about speaking Welsh in public. In recent years, several high-profile cases have confirmed that this is not an isolated issue. In November 2023, for example, the BBC reported that former rugby player turned pundit Mike Phillips had experienced bullying on account of his Welsh skills. This led to the dismissal of several senior figures at S4C, the Welsh language channel. This was something that Dr Jones and I discussed.
Na'i gychwyn gyntaf o'r achos yma Mike Phillips, so ti sôn am fanna dweud am yr person yn yr S4C yn ôl bod sôn, so honiad.
So yes, I would argue that you do have the language police that do complain about the standards of Welsh. From my personal opinion, and I think there's actually been a study on this, those type of people, the language police, actually turn people away from speaking Welsh. Let's look at the Mike Phillips example. In my opinion, his Welsh is absolutely great. Okay, he may use the odd English word, but that's absolutely fine. The same goes for John Hartson. They use a bit of English, but I think that's something natural. I use a lot of English myself. However, I do feel the need for a high standard of Welsh in professional jobs, so somewhere where one needs a perfect level of speaking and written standard. For example, I'm a lecturer, so I need to maintain that high standard at all times. But when it comes to teaching students who speak Welsh, to make sure that I'm not intimidating them, I use a lot of Wenglish. I know from experience that students can be hesitant to study a Welsh language module because they worry that their Welsh isn't good enough. The most important thing to me, as a Welsh language lecturer, is that students use Welsh as much as they can. If that means using Wenglish, that's absolutely fine. Okay, when it comes to written or presentational submissions, I do expect the Welsh to be a particular standard. But just to reiterate, the so-called language police, in my opinion, do more harm than good for the Welsh language.
Cymraeg ysgrifenedig, fi'n dda. Ond pan mae'n dod i seminar, so dwi'n dysgu myfyrwyr sy'n siarad Cymraeg, ac er mwyn ei siŵr bod dwi'n mynd intimidating, be dwi'n neud ydy dwi'n defnyddio lot o English, achos y gwybod o brofiad bod myfyrwyr weithiau ddim eisiau mynd i seminar Cymraeg neu yn hesitant oherwydd bod nhw'n poeni di Cymraeg nhw ddim digon da. So, be sy'n bwysig i fi, bod chi'n defnyddio'r Cymraeg, dim bwys o chi'n defnyddio English. Oce, okay, pan mae'n dod i, os yw'n cyflwyno gweithio yn Gymraeg yn ysgrifenedig, neu os yw'n gwneud cyflwyniad, swn so i'n disgwyl wedyn bod i Cymraeg nhw o safon, ond y bobl sydd yn rhan o'r heddlu iaith, bod nhw'n creu mwy o niwed i'r iaith na yn helpu efo mewn ffordd.
Diolch, Dr. Sean Jones, Senior Lecturer at Cardiff University.
I wanted to speak to people that are living and creating in Welsh. Welsh comedian, actor and writer Leila Navabi has grown her audiences in both languages. She has just completed her first stand-up tour, Composition, which received several outstanding reviews. She has written for programmes such as Nevermind the Buzzcocks, and in 2021 she co-wrote and starred in BBC iPlayer series Vandals. Firstly, I asked Leila Navabi to talk about her upbringing and relationship with the Welsh language.
Yeah, so I spoke Welsh a lot as a child. And then as I got older, I sort of just didn't. And it sort of was like a 10-year gap of not speaking any Welsh, really, because I moved to London and, you know, sort of just rejected my Welsh identity. I think I felt quite rejected by, I suppose, the Welsh community at large, really. I think probably in part due to being just a person of colour, and just being a bit strange. And at the time, I didn't think it was like, it sounds strange really, but Cardiff wasn't really, it's mad to say it now because it's so the opposite, but it wasn't really a place for queer young people. I think it was, you know, it was probably great for older gay men in clubs, but I couldn't find a community for myself, and so I went to London and sort of fell in love a little bit with Camden and the idea of being Pete Doherty essentially and went and did that, and sort of just I lost my accent. I sort of just pretended I wasn't Welsh, and then started to sort of become quite prolific. I say prolific, that's not the right word, but doing work in English in London, and that started to go very well, and very quickly people realised that I was Welsh, and suddenly there felt like more of an acceptance towards my identity, I think, and I felt welcomed back into a Welsh community, and I think sometimes still I struggle with, is that because I've had success with the English medium that now people want to work with me in the Welsh medium. Maybe, but also I do think the community has adapted and changed a lot at large, and it's sort of more inclusive and more encouraging. And I moved back to Wales because I felt suddenly a shift living in England that I couldn't be there anymore because of how I felt about the political disparity between myself and the English government, and sort of just the vibe really just changed, and I just had that here, I think, you know, I just wanted to go home, so I did.
So what are the differences between performing comedy in English and performing comedy in Welsh?
It's so different. It's crazy. It's actually crazy how different it is. I think, I mean, again, you're on stage with a microphone, that's sort of the same, but in terms of culturally, we're just so different, right? And so a lot of my, like, I can't really do much of the same material. The things I talk about are the same. So I'll talk about identity and I'll talk about culture. But again, those things are going to be catered towards the systems we live within, right? And in Wales, that's different to England. And so when I'm writing stuff for a Welsh language audience, I can be more specific and I can be more personal, I think, sometimes, just by nature of often we know a lot of the same people. Just in those spaces, but also I don't know, I think Wales has such a long history with storytelling, that actually I think stand-up is you have more, it's a word, carte blanche, what's the word, like you have more permission really to sit in the story a little bit more, not to go joke, which can be a bit, I find that a bit tiring sometimes in English, sort of, you know, we can do it, but for me, like, I think there's beauty in a story. I think it's a very Welsh way to feel about anything really, but I sort of miss being able to really paint a picture for an audience when I'm in England, because people want jokes, whereas in Wales, you know, you're happy to sit in the painting of characters and scene when you're telling a story to someone. So that's interesting. But also, I guess stand-up comedy is a newer art form for the Welsh language, right? And so, mm-hmm. I mean, you look at Tudur is definitely someone I looked up to. And, you know, and Ellis James as well, and all, sort of all these people. And then like later on, like, Kiri's doing Welsh language stand-up, and that's amazing to see as well. I think it's just interesting seeing how people operate in different languages, really. It does. I think a lot of people say this, they feel like a different person when they're speaking Welsh or English or whatever language they might speak, right? And I think that definitely translates into the work as well.
Our conversation then turned to the upcoming Eisteddfod that will be held in Rhondda and Taf. I asked Leila whether or not she will be performing next year.
I think I will perform just if I'm invited, if I'm asked. I'm scared. Genuinely, I'm scared if they don't ask me, or if I'm not allowed to perform in any capacity, I would feel such rejection that it would really damage my mental health. So that scares me, which might be an extreme thing to say, but I've always felt so welcome and so accepted. And I try and look, I do try and speak just Welsh while I'm on the mic. I do. Sometimes I'll use Welsh English words, but we need to be more explicit about what is and isn't allowed, I think. And I think since the frenzy's died down a bit, perhaps it'll be a bit easier. And I've been in touch with the Eisteddfod and they've been very reassuring. So that has helped me. But I do worry. I think I'd be lying if I said it. And it's the first time I felt worried in that space, really, that I'm not going to be good enough, or I'm not going to, you know, people aren't going to accept me. And that's scary when you feel at home somewhere, right? Like, and when it's so representative of your individual identity, right? So it's hard. I'm a bit worried, but also I think if everyone just went, oh, we're not performing then, I don't think that would solve anything. I think that would give people who are bigoted, and that's not the Eisteddfod themselves, that is just sort of that, you know, there are bigots on everywhere who have their own views and are nasty about it, I guess that'll give them what they want, and I don't want to give them what they want. And to be fair, I don't think the Eisteddfod want to give them what they want either.
For my last question, I asked Leila what she found helpful to speak more Welsh.
I think honestly just speaking it uninhabitedly, like with your friends who speak Welsh, and just going, I want to start speaking Welsh to you, and it's not going to be good, and you can correct me if you want, but also like just let's just do this, please don't judge me, it was the most helpful thing for me. It's hard because you develop language patterns with people, right? And so if you're in an English language pattern with someone, it's kind of hard to switch, but you just have to do it, really. And knowing that most people, especially people that are friends and family, won't judge you for not being 100%, you know, in your language. I think honestly watching a lot of Es Pedwar was very helpful, and just consuming sort of Welsh media. I got very into Hansh, which I don't know what age Hansh runs up to. I feel a bit like, oh, maybe I should go in, I don't know, maybe I should be watching Am Dro now, maybe that's more my age bracket, I don't know. But yeah, I suppose there's so many really cool things being written and created through the Welsh language. You sort of spoil the choice, and when you realise that world exists and you start to consume art in that way, you just realise how exciting of a medium it is, really. What else? I guess just like sort of writing in Welsh as well, even if that's just to yourself. I started writing emails in Welsh and to other Welsh speakers, can you imagine? And just using it, and if it's wrong, it doesn't matter. Like, people know the gist of what you're trying to say all the time, I would say. Like, so if it's not perfect, don't let that insecurity drag you down, which again is harder when there are conversations being had about the integrity of the language. But when you're in a social setting, who cares? You speak how you want to speak, and ultimately that's what's going to help you as an individual, but also help the language stay alive and thrive in the way we all want it to.
Diolch yn fawr, Leila Navabi, Welsh comedian, actor and writer. It may sound simple, but not being able to speak Welsh outside of the classroom played a huge role in my relationship with the Welsh language. It's incredibly tough for children in South Wales to see Welsh as a conversational language that isn't confined to the freezing cold assembly halls and dimly lit claustrophobic classrooms. When I was young, I was mocked by the kids on my street for attending a Welsh school. This created a great deal of anxiety, and as a result, I never spoke Welsh outside of school. Also, similarly to what Dr. John said earlier, I didn't speak Welsh with my school friends outside the school because it wasn't deemed as a cool language to speak. The reason why I speak Welsh today is down to pure luck. If my personal tutors at Cardiff School of Journalism, Media and Culture had noticed on my record that I attended a Welsh school during our first meeting, things would be very different. I certainly wouldn't be presenting this podcast. After deciding to study half of my undergraduate degree in Welsh, I felt what some would consider their moment of awakening. Suddenly, the Welsh language became a prominent part of my academic life again, but most importantly, and differently to before, it had become a part of my social life. With much thanks to places like Chloe Vo Bach, festivals such as Tafol, and the great friends that I made during my time at JOMEC, my perception of the Welsh language changed. I wanted to understand why, when I started speaking Welsh, my perception of the Welsh language was very limited and why there were so few opportunities for me to speak Welsh outside of school. To understand this, I had the pleasure of talking to Professor Martin Johns, Professor of History at Swansea University. He is an author, podcast, radio and television writer and presenter. His work includes several novels, including Wales, England's First Colony, which has now been adapted into a two-part television series which aired on BBC Wales. He has also written and presented a BBC Radio Wales series, The Pub Historian. Like a lot of young people in Wales today, I'm the first Welsh speaker in my family. I find myself in a very privileged position. Many of my friends are learning Welsh, and like anything in life, they are finding it difficult. I was born and raised in Newport, an area that traditionally doesn't have the highest number of Welsh speakers. Just over 20% of Newport's population say they can speak Welsh, according to the 2023 census. Professor Martin Johns explains how the industrial areas of Wales transitioned to a predominantly English-speaking society.
It's in the 19th century that English really spreads within Wales, especially as a working-class language. And then in communities where both languages are widely spoken, which is basically kind of industrial Wales, because in rural Wales, Welsh is still by far the dominant language. But in industrial communities, then it tends to be seen that the languages sort of had different functions. It wasn't necessarily that they were rivals, but they had different functions. So English was seen as the language of business, of law, of officialdom, of education, whereas Welsh was seen as the language of home and religion. And that doesn't mean that Welsh was second class. It just had different functions. So now we tend to look back and think that people kind of denigrated Welsh and looked down upon Welsh. And, you know, the odd person did. But by and large, there was a strong sense that the two languages had different functions. And that was the key thing. And in a world, and we forget just how central religion was to people. And in a world where, you know, Welsh was going to give you access to life everlasting. You know, and that was no, you know, saving you from hell and giving you eternal life is no small thing. So, you know, it doesn't matter that some English tourist said that Welsh was a barbaric language. You know, if you could hear the word God in Welsh, if you could get married in Welsh, if your kids were baptized in Welsh, you know, this wasn't some second class uncivilized language. So, you know, the key to the relationship is in the 19th century is that they had different functions.
Okay.
And then it's as religion starts to decline, then Welsh loses some of its status and its prestige. And that's when the fact that English was the language of the economy and and business and getting on in life, then that's when that starts to really kind of matter. Because, you know, that had been totally compensated for by Welsh being the language of religion. Once religion loses its hold on people, then actually it is English that has the status and the power. And that influences the decisions people make in terms of how they raise their children. And that's what leads to the decline of the language. It's Welsh speakers deciding to raise their children in English. And why do they do that? Because you want to help your children get on. If you were underground, you know, the last thing you want to do is for your kids to have to kind of you know, live the tough life you had, and how did you make sure your kids escaped a tough life on the farm, or you know, down the pit? You made sure that they were fluent in English. You know, and if Welsh doesn't have a, if there's no reason to carry on speaking Welsh, then, you know, people don't think it matters that they speak to their kids in English. In fact, they think they're helping their kids speak in English. That doesn't happen in rural Wales, because to not pass on the language to your kids would have been to kind of to sort of give them a disability, essentially. Because if the shops are in Welsh, if community life is in Welsh, if you don't speak Welsh, you're an outsider. So it happens in rural, in the decisions happen in industrial areas where migration has started to change the community balance of languages. As people move in from England to work in the coal industry, the English language spreads. That doesn't change the number of Welsh speakers, but it changes the percentage of Welsh speakers. And then the number of Welsh speakers goes down because those Welsh speakers in industrial areas often decide to raise their kids in English.
The difference in Welsh education today compared to years ago is that today children speak Welsh in the classroom and English on the play yard, whereas years ago children spoke English in the classroom and Welsh on the playground. I asked Professor Johns why this has happened.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happened. In the 19th century, you know, children did play in Welsh and English was the language of the classroom. And the reverse has happened. And that's because, you know, it's quite hard to shift people's first language. Mm-hmm. You know, people are more comfortable by and large in their first language. Now, obviously, some people have two first languages if they're raised bilingually, but most people don't. And in the 19th century, it was Welsh that was people's first language. That's what they naturally played in. Today, you know, it's English as people's first language in industrial areas. It doesn't happen in rural Wales, but, you know, in Cardiff and Swansea, you know, by and large, it's there. But it's also about prestige, you know, and whereas in the 19th century, prestige was all about religion, today, amongst kids, it's about being cool. And Welsh, for many people, just isn't cool. You know, it's not the language of TikTok and YouTube and stuff like that. And that's why I think things like Hamsh and stuff like that on S4C are really important, because they sort of modernize the language and they show that you can be a teenager through the medium of Welsh. Just as Dafydd Iwan, you know, when he was a young guy himself, just as him and other people like him helped modernize the Welsh language for teenagers in the 60s, you know, by singing pop songs and protest songs in Welsh language.
Professor Johns and I later discussed the topic of elitism in Welsh language circles. I wondered if this elitism existed and whether or not it stemmed from the differences between the North and the South. Here's what he had to say.
I mean, I don't think it's a North-South split. You know, I think it in many ways it's about sort of first language speakers versus second language speakers. Yeah. But it's not even about that, because there are plenty of first language speakers who feel their Welsh isn't good enough. Mm-hmm. You know, in some ways, maybe it's about class or education. I don't think North South is the right way to think about it. But there is, I think, an elitism in Welsh language circles. And that's not unique, because, you know, there are plenty of kind of grammar Nazis, if you want to put it that way, in English. And, you know, when people complain about, you know, spelling mistakes and misplaced apostrophes and stuff like that, you know, all languages have this sense that precision matters. You know, people have complained about kind of slovenly English and slang English in the BBC for decades. Mm-hmm. So Welsh isn't unusual in having a kind of a sense that there is a proper way of speaking. That's the first thing to say. The second is, it is very real. And it's, you know, and I know lots of people say it never happens, but as someone who speaks crap Welsh, you know, I have been made, and I've been told explicitly a couple of times by people at S4C to redo something because I phrase something using slang, or, you know, you use the odd English word. And that doesn't happen very often. And mostly, you know, they just want anybody who can speak Welsh. You know, there aren't enough Welsh speakers, frankly, to be for S4C to be too fussy in who they get on. Mm-hmm. But absolutely, it does happen sometimes, and it has happened to me. And there is a sense, you know, oh, you know, you're not doing it properly.
So why do you think there is this complexity in Wales to manage a bilingual culture?
Well, I mean, the history of the language is, you know, that in itself creates a bit of an insecurity because, you know, deep down people know that Welsh didn't decline because the English government did anything. You know, it didn't, but it's never made any effort to stamp it out. The Welsh language declined because English people moved into Wales and Welsh people stopped speaking the language to their children. That's why the language declined. And that in itself kind of creates a bit of kind of a defensiveness, around the language. There's the whole kind of history that obviously, you know, are we a nation or aren't we a nation? You know, obviously we are a nation, but, you know, we're a nation without self-government, or we didn't have self-government until devolution. You know, devolution only came in through the skin of its teeth. In 1979, everybody said no to devolution, very clearly. You know, even though support for independence is kind of on the rise, it's still, you know, a minority of people. You know, it's one in three support it, which means two in three don't.
Yep.
So it's a minority of people. So, you know, there are all these kind of site, you know, issues around kind of, you know, an uneasiness about Welshness as an identity, as a nation. You know, but what is the one thing that says unequivocally that Wales is different to England? It is language. But if you start to say the real thing that has kind of made Wales survive as a nation, the reason why we're a Maoheed, the reason why we're not like Cornwall and our identity kind of faded away amongst most people, is because the language. The language is the single most important reason why Welsh identity has survived so strongly over the centuries. But as soon as you say that, what does that mean for people who don't speak Welsh? You know, if Welsh identity is absolutely dependent upon the existence of the language, as it is in so many ways, that is excluding, you know, three quarters of the population of Wales. So that makes it really difficult. So, you know, there is that psychological element that's really important. But I also think there's a very practical element to your original question about, you know, why is it so hard to create a bilingual culture? Because it's not two different languages trying to coexist with each other. It's one group of people who only speak one language and another group of people who speak both languages. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you have, you know, a meeting and it's bilingual, you know, and you do the first bit in Welsh and then the next bit in English, the people who speak Welsh have heard it twice. Yeah. You know, and if you do the English bit first, then there's no point doing the Welsh bit unless for symbolic reasons. There's no point doing it for communication reasons because everybody who speaks Welsh speaks English. So, you know, you either put Welsh first for practical reasons, for symbolic reasons, and then all those Welsh people who don't speak Welsh are kind of, you know, sitting there twiddling their thumbs because they don't understand what's been said. And then, you know, but the Welsh speakers have to hear it twice. So it's actually really difficult to do very practical things like run a meeting, you know, or, you know, have a TV program or anything that's bilingual. What I don't think we have been good enough is using kind of technology around this, you know. If you're interviewing a Welsh speaker on BBC One Wales, why not have that interview sometimes in Welsh? Mm-hmm. You know, if the leader of Plaid Cymru is more comfortable speaking Welsh, then why not interview him in Welsh and have subtitles? Mm-hmm. We've compartmentalized the two languages. You know, we've, instead of having like a bilingual forum and culture, we said, you know, this is where you speak Welsh and this is where you speak English. Which is exactly, and the danger of that is exactly what people said would happen if you create an S4C in 1982. People said, you're going to put all the Welsh speakers over there and everyone else in Wales would ignore them. Whereas at least if you have Welsh programmes on BBC One and ITV, people know the language is there. They know it's alive. So instead of trying to have a bilingual channel, where, you know, some programs are in Welsh, some programs are in English, and some programs are in both, you know, we've compartmentalized them again. We've reproduced the what happened in the 19th century, where Welsh has one place and English has another place. We've reproduced that, and that can be dangerous. But the alternative is quite difficult in terms of practical, you know, in terms of the practicalities, because Welsh speakers understand, you know, the English language. And, you know, if you had, you know, I went to a bilingual school, you know, there was a Welsh stream and English stream. It wasn't a Welsh school or English school, it was both. But ultimately, you know, if you've got a bunch of kids playing together and half of them speak Welsh and half of them don't, you're going to end up playing in English, you know, leaving aside all the prestige stuff, because that's the language everyone spoke. And that's what happened in the valleys in the early 20th century, in the late 19th century. As English people move in, you know, if the Welsh speakers can speak English because they learnt it at school, then everything just switches to English. So just, you know, you either have to do this artificial symbolic thing of trying to do everything in two languages, which is stupid, when everybody only speaks one language, whether everybody speaks one of the languages, or you just do the practical thing and you do everything in one language. But unfortunately, that language will always be English. So that, you know, that pushes aside Welsh. So it's like, what do? Do we do the practicalities, which really means everything in English, or do we do the symbolic thing, which is clumsy and awkward and unpractical in many ways, but it is important symbolically? So that's a very long-winded answer to, actually, I think it's quite difficult to have a bilingual culture in practical terms.
Diolch yn fawr i Professor Martin Johns, Professor of History at Swansea University. So far, we have heard from academics and artists, but I wanted to speak to a governing body. I wanted to talk to the Welsh Language Commissioner to get a better understanding of the progress that's been made to create a better Welsh-speaking culture in Wales. I also wanted to see the work that's been done to help the bilingual, second language and Welsh language learners feel more accepted and comfortable with their Welsh language abilities. I feel lucky because I know my Welsh language is good, and although at times I stumble, I still feel confident when speaking it. However, as we've heard in this podcast, confidence and acceptance continues to be an issue for so many people in Wales. I had the pleasure of interviewing the Welsh Language Commissioner, Eva Griffith-Jones. Her role as the Welsh Language Commissioner is to facilitate and promote the use of the Welsh language in public and professional settings. As well as this, the Commissioner works accordingly with the aims of the Welsh Language Measures Act of 2011, a modernised replacement of the Welsh Language Act of 1993, which is the legal framework regarding the use of the Welsh language in the delivery of public services. I began by asking the Welsh Language Commissioner to explain her role in more detail.
So the Welsh Language Commissioner is a role set up by law, by something called the Welsh Language Measure, which was passed in 2011. So the main purpose of the role is to promote and facilitate the use of Welsh. That the measure explains, gives me powers for what I can do. And some of that work includes providing advice to ministers, trying to influence policy, but there is a lot of information in the measure about how I can go about ensuring that the public sector in Wales provides services in Welsh. And there's a series of instructions in the measure about how I should go about that. So yeah, so that's what I'm responsible for, is to make sure that public bodies in Wales provide services through the medium of Welsh, and more widely, my wish is to make sure that people use those services.
What has been your biggest challenge so far?
In this role, there are a lot of challenges. I came into the role where the census figures showed that there was a decrease in the total number of Welsh speakers. However, there are still a lot of us here, a lot of us who want to use Welsh in our daily lives. And some of the figures were really encouraging. For example, the number of young adults speaking Welsh was increased throughout Wales. So lots of positive signs in the figures, although the general picture was a little disappointing. So my work is set against that background, really. Some other challenges have come to the fore during the year. For example, we did a survey with Welsh speakers, and 18% of them said that somebody stopped them from speaking Welsh. Now, this seems a very high figure to me, but you can just see it happening, can't you? Two people, young people on a bus, and people say, oh, don't speak that language. You can just see it happening. So I definitely want to undertake some more research into what's going on there. On the positive side, we've seen definitely an increase in the quality of Welsh language services provided to people in Wales, and people are using those services. So things which we now take for granted, you know, Welsh language apps on the BBC, for example, they didn't exist 10 or 15 years ago, and many other things I could name. So there certainly is progress, but there are also challenges.
You spoke of challenges there. The Welsh government have headlined a target for 1 million Welsh speakers by 2050. Of course, this is an ambitious objective, but how can we work to help achieve this?
Yeah, it's a fantastic aim, isn't it? And I know that there's a lot of good work happening with learning Welsh to adults, but the crucial bit of the picture is increasing the number of those receiving Welsh medium education. And I think it's fantastic that Welsh Government are introducing a Welsh medium education bill in the next period. And I think this is a really crucial piece of legislation, really, which hopefully will lead to more people attending Welsh medium schools. We know that the people who are most fluent will be the ones who use Welsh more. It's no surprise, is it? And also through my work, what I've seen is a great demand for Welsh speakers across a number of sectors to be able to offer better services. And in Wales, of course, that means Welsh language services. So the demand is there, certainly. And if we get the education bit right as well, then I think we're in a good place. There are challenges with the education bit. I mean, the workforce, there's a problem in attracting teachers in any language, and there's an additional challenge to find teachers through the medium of Welsh. So it's a work which we all have to do together, I believe. An interesting thing about the Cymraeg 250 strategy is that there were two headlines, really. The first was the 1 million Welsh speakers, and yes, that's fantastic. But there was another aim as well, which I think actually is just as important. It is to double the daily use of Welsh. So as the Welsh Language Commissioner, we're running a campaign at the moment called Defnyddia dy Gymraeg, it's Use Your Welsh, and lots of organisations across all sectors are joining in that campaign. It's about really getting the message out there that services are now available. You can use your Welsh anywhere, more or less. And you can also seek out opportunities to practice and use your Welsh. So it's a campaign which aims to bring people together, really. And also, I think it's really, really important for people to use the Welsh they got. Not to, you know, don't worry too much about mutations. Yes, if you can, they are great. But people will understand you without the mutations as well. So speak the Welsh you've got and be proud and happy and enjoy using it.
So researching for this podcast, I found that there are a huge amount of second language Welsh speakers and Welsh language learners who feel a kind of imposter syndrome around native speakers. How can you help to address this issue for people who aren't first language speakers?
There's a role for Welsh speakers here as well, isn't there? I mean, the first thing is to be, you know, extremely proud that you can speak more than one language. It's actually that you are in the majority across the world. Most people in the world are at least bilingual, but you can be very proud that you can speak two languages. It really does give you two windows on the world. So, you know, I would say, you know, never, never apologise for your Welsh. Your Welsh is as good as anybody else's. It's new languages always evolve and change. So your Welsh is Welsh. So, you know, don't worry about it. But I think definitely that Welsh speakers have a role to encourage people to use the Welsh they've got, to be patient with Welsh learners, to try not to turn to the English for the conversation, but to accept English words in the conversation. Welsh speakers use English words all the time. It's not a problem. The main thing is, you know, speaking Welsh, because there's such history, and, you know, we're living next door to one of the most dominant languages in the world. So what we are doing here is actually quite unique and amazing. And, you especially coming from a non-Welsh speaking background should be really, really very proud of the way you can speak Welsh. You can use Welsh in work. And I'm talking personally, it's easier for me to speak Welsh than English. So I fully understand it might be easier for you to speak English than Welsh, but that doesn't mean we can't use both and enjoy using both and, enjoy reading in both, enjoy listening in both. It's not unsurprising that you may have a stronger language, but that doesn't diminish in any way the skills you've got in that second language.
In my interview with Professor Martin Jones, he argued that Wales has compartmentalised both the English and Welsh language. What are your thoughts on this?
I have quite a strong view on that, actually. Actually, in bilingual spaces, the common language is English. So, there are things like, I've seen it in my career, things like, youth work, bilingual youth work. Well, actually, it's not. It's actually English youth work with some people can say some things in Welsh. So actually protecting Welsh only spaces, not only Welsh only spaces, but actually protecting Welsh only spaces is actually really, really important. Things like going to see Welsh language theatre, that's one thing. I mean, there are so little examples of Welsh only spaces. Most things aren't. And this is very interesting, isn't it? You remember the debate last year about the National Eisteddfod. I understand that the desire to keep a Welsh only space, because actually I live and work in Cardiff. Where is the Welsh only space I can attend on a daily basis? There isn't. And actually the National Eisteddfod is actually the only space I can go to where I can go into a shop and speak Welsh and know that I'd be understood. So I would defend, I think it's quite important to have Welsh-only spaces. That doesn't mean that I wouldn't enjoy, really creative bilingual projects, bilingual events, absolutely. But we also need to protect Welsh-only spaces.
I think it would be great for the BBC to showcase more Welsh language programming on television. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, that's an interesting debate. And, young people, as I understand it, I don't class myself as young anymore, relish watching programmes with subtitles. So, as I understand it, that's what the evidence shows. So why not have Welsh language programmes with subtitles on BBC One and other platforms? So yes, I mean, that's something I would be very open to. And it's interesting, actually, with Radio Wales, I've seen a tendency to not cover Welsh things, which doesn't make sense, because, as you know, so many parents of children in Welsh medium education don't speak Welsh themselves, so they want to know about, Welsh cultural life and what their children might be up to in different organisations. So I would very much welcome perhaps more of a, and in the same way, I'm really interested in what happens in English cultural life in Wales. So from both aspects, I'd very much encourage perhaps more cross-pollination or better understanding, but also keeping Welsh-only spaces available.
Diolch yn fawr Eva Griffith-Jones, Welsh Language Commissioner. Diolch yn fawr to everybody that took part in this podcast. I hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as I enjoyed making it. This podcast was supported by Books Council of Wales and Creative Wales' new audience grant fund. If you enjoyed this podcast and want to support our work, you can join the IWA as a member at iwa.wales. There, you will also find out about our events, our training and research. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to welsh.agenda@iwa.org.uk.